situation in Michalei is Asr. So what if the Isser involved is an Isser Drabbanan? So this was a major machlokas, a very big discussion. And discussion is important for halacha l'maisa for sure. Certainly something that comes up quite a bit. But it's also important conceptually, just the way in which the question is approached is affected by how you understand Segresha, how you understand the Rabbanans, how you understand a lot of the different moving parts here. So it's worth discussing from many different angles. So primarily the major players in this discussion is the Trumas HaDeshen. Trumas HaDeshen, which was also in the Mar Makomashi, seems to say that Segresha by the Rabbanan is Mutter. And a lot of Achronim followed this view. A lot of Achronim thought this was the case. The Meiri also says this, by the way, the Meiri in Shabbos, it was also on the Mar Makomos. And a lot of the later Sfarim thought that this was the case. The Tshuvas Ber Yitzchak and the Shar HaMelech, and the Torah, and the Das Torah, the Marsham, brings a bunch of other Makaris that he thinks essentially supports this. Taurus Rafal was Siv's father-in-law. He's one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. So he has a whole piece where he essentially establishes that he thinks this is the case, that one can be makel by a psik reisha by a drabanan. The Vilna Gaon in the Bir HaGra, he understands the Trumas HaDeshen a little bit more of a restricted fashion. He thinks it's only true if we have a combination of two drabanans here, meaning that for instance, if it's a psik reisha d'lo nichalei. So as we see, the psik reisha d'lo nichalei, the Aruch HaShulchan holds as mutter, but many others hold as an issur drabanan. So if it's a psik reisha d'lo nichalei, which is an issur drabanan according to everybody else, and the issur involved is an issur drabanan, so the Vilna Gaon thought that was what the Trumas HaDeshen was talking about. Hi. Right, he wouldn't take it as expansively as others understand it, that it's mutter with all the Rabbanans, but that if it happens to be lo nichalei and the Rabbanan, those two come together, because lo nichalei itself is a Rabbanan, and either the Rabbanan or mutter. So for the Aruch it's mutter, for everyone else it's the Rabbanan. So if it's lo nichalei and the Isser involves the Rabbanan, so then he's ready to say that we can understand the Trumas HaDeshen to be saying. Hi.
So the Aruch, it doesn't even have to be a Drabanan, just any Pesach Trish.
Right, that is the view of the Aruch. In general, that's something we have to get to a little bit also. How do we paskin in terms of the Aruch? So that's a whole big debate, but it's probably likely that the view most Rishonim is against him. Well, the Aruch has some good proofs from some good Gemaras, but it seems that the weight of Pesach, at least to take into account, is that it's at least an Issa Drabanan, or not least, but that it is an Issa Drabanan. So in this case, if the Isser involved is Drabanan and the Psik Reisha D'lo Nichalei, so then that's two Drabanan, so then that certainly gives you grounds to be Megal. This is a big discussion. Halacha L'maisa affects a lot of things. We'll try to say a little bit more about that either today or next time, but conceptually and practically this is a very significant issue. Especially because the Magen Avraham disagrees. The Magen Avraham thought that we don't follow this view. He thought that even by a Drabanan, we would still Aser in a Psik Reisha. The Rashba also says this. The Rashba, in his commentary to Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chaf in the Beis, again, this is all, I think, on the Mar Makomos. So the Rashba was Machmer on this, and there was somewhat of a Machlokas. The Sri Deyesh has a Tshuva in which he asserts differently in the name of the Magen Avraham. He understands the Magen Avraham to be saying that, like the Trumas HaDeshen, that Psik Reisha by Drabanan is Mutter. And then the Sri Deyesh himself, in a later tshuva, prints a response from a, I guess, relatively young Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach. The Sri Deyesh died many decades before Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, but they did live at the same time. So he quotes a younger Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, who pointed out that it's against the explicit words of the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham, in one place, very explicitly quotes the Trumas HaDeshen and disagrees. So it's hard to say that he thinks it's Mutter D'Rabbanan always. The case in which the Sri Deyesh was talking about from the Magen Avraham, it's in Reish Nun Gimel, is he's talking about a situation where it's Amir L'Akam. So if you have Amir al-Akum by a Psik Resha, so then, okay, there's more room to be Makel, because the whole Yesod of Amir al-Akum is that the person is considered to be your Shliach, in a sense, whether actual Shlichas or a broader use of the term, is considered to be your emissary. So if they don't know what they're doing, if they don't have any intent to be doing something, so then if the action is just provoked automatically, so then, okay, so we wouldn't extend the Chumrah of Amir al-Akum in such a case. Then maybe there is grounds to say that. But to say that any Issa Drabbanan, let's say a Malacha Drabbanan, that you can do a Malacha Drabbanan just because it's a Psikration, it's Drabbanan, so that he thinks is not really reconcilable with Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham essentially expressed that he disagrees with the Trumas Hadeshin about this, and therefore it's not a viable approach within his words. So that exception, so to speak, for Amir al-Akum, also points us in a little bit of a direction of looking at this question kind of conceptually, that we should understand should we view Psik Resha as potentially the Rabbanan here? Whether it's Psik Resha or Nichalei, or maybe even Psik Resha or Nichalei, which is also a machlokas, and therefore just view this in terms of the laws of the Rabbanans? Or should we take somewhat of a more assertive stance and look at the facts of the situation? So here, what the Magen Avraham is saying, look at the fact that it's, or what's being said about the Magen Avraham, that Amir al-Akum, the whole Yesod, is not simply an Issa d'Rabbanan, but it's an Issa d'Rabbanan that's premised on the fact that he is your Shliach l'Akum. So if it doesn't make sense to say that because he's not doing anything on purpose, so then that's a reason to exclude Psik Resha by that type of a d'Rabbanan. I'll give you another example. The Belzer Dayan of Shlomo Gross has a tshuva. His tshuva is called Mishnah Shlema. So he has a tshuva about whether or not one can take an instrument and use it to try to not necessarily play the instrument, but attract everyone's attention to quiet down. So if one uses an instrument without intent to play the instrument musically, so should we say that that's also usur? Playing an instrument on Shabbos is an usur, is an issur drabbanan. So what if you want to pick up the instrument in such a way that it will cause it to make a sound? So it's essentially a psik resha by that drabbanan. So he thought that there was a svara that even the Magen Avraham would say that you wouldn't necessarily ask for that. Why? Because he looks at the facts of the case. So when it talks about playing an instrument, so that's a particular gzeira drabana, that we're worried that you're going to come to fix the instrument because it's not going to sound right. Gzeira shemi atake in klishir, you'll realize that the instrument is not playing what you want it to play. So that only applies if somebody is purposely trying to play the instrument. If somebody has interest in the musical output, so then he'll be concerned that it's not playing properly and he might want to fix it. But if whatever usage of this instrument is going to come incidentally, you're not focused on playing it musically, so then he thinks there's a big svara to say that that's the kind of drabbanan we can accept with a psik resha. So essentially, he's looking at the particular details of this drabbanan. It says in the case of this drabbanan of the gzeira not to play instruments, shemi yatake and klishir, so that only applies, that gzeira only makes sense if you're actually playing it on purpose. If you're provoking it through a psik resha, it doesn't make sense to say that drabbanan should apply. So he wants to say, an interesting svara then, that even someone who's machmir on general drabbanan, like the Magen Avraham, wouldn't necessarily extend it to this particular case. Daniel?
Just about the Amir al-Akum. The svara was because he's your shliach, that's no problem. So that's what he's doing, that's okay. But you know, the shlichus, I don't always say that it's a question about how you perceive shlichus. Like, if the guy's an extension of you, it doesn't matter if he doesn't have any das, because the shliach doesn't have any das at all.
See, that's a complicated question in general, because there is a whole discussion what is the gedder of shlichus. If you want to see perhaps the most comprehensive discussion about this with Joseph Engel in his Lekach Tov, the first essay in Lekach Tov has a very sweeping essay about that question. But it's a big question whether or not that makes any sense here on two levels, or whether it's transferable here on two levels. One is because we say the Akum is Kishlucho, It's not clear that we're drawing on the general shlichus categories, especially because, as we've established from day one here, that the role of shlichus in Melachah Shabbos is already kind of murky. The idea that anyone else can serve as your actual shliach in terms of Melachah Shabbos is not clear that such a concept really exists. So when we say there's an Isra Amir Lakum because he is like your emissary, that's why I'm adopting kind of using the English word, because it may not be Shlucho Shalom Kamoso, it's just he's acting on your behalf. So whatever gather applies to Shlichus as a whole, it's not clear that Amir Lakum Shlichus is really the same thing. It's interesting because maybe we'll have an opportunity to focus more on Amir Lakum. But there are at least two different basic approaches in Amir Lakum. Amir Lakum could either be some type of extended shlichus concept, or it could be that it's basically a davar davar issue. You're not supposed to talk about malachas on Shabbos, so therefore to instruct an akum to do malacha is going to be a violation of that prohibition. So one could argue in the case of a psik resha, it's neither. Like both svaras don't seem to fully apply, because if you say, like he was suggesting, like the Sri Yesh, like Rav Shlomo Zalman was suggesting, according to the Sri Yesh, that he's not your shliach. But according to the Davar Davar issue, it works even better. You're not telling him to do a malacha. You're telling him to do something which is not a malacha. Happens to be, it's going to provoke a malacha. So you tell him to open the fridge, for example. Opening the fridge, we're assuming it's not a malacha. Turning on the light is a malacha, but you're not telling him to turn on a light. So one could argue that whichever svara is dominant in terms of Amir Lakum, there is some grounds to exclude psik resha from that area. I think it was Tovia first.
Is it so clear that picking up a kli, zemer, for intent of quieting everyone down, the sound that will make will be a psik resha as opposed to practicing psik resha or something?
No, it's not so clear. It's a longer discussion. There's a lot of details to analyze in it, but just in terms of his question of whether, let's say we do grant that it is a psik resha. So if it's a psik resha and the Isser involved with Rabbanan, so is he so sure that the Machmirim, like the Magen Avraham, would ask for that? So that's what he wants to say, this svara that I'm particularly interested in, just because in terms of how it reflects on the whole discussion, that maybe we could look at the particular Rabbanan and not just say, well, it's Rabbanan, check off our yellow category, but it's Drabanan, and the Drabanan is about the concern that it's going to come to fix the instruments. That concern only makes sense in a situation where you're paying attention. So there are certain areas where the lack of attention that's involved in psik resha, the lack of desire for the psik resha action, even if otherwise it may incur a liability because of its inevitable nature, but the fact that it's not what you're interested in could be relevant. So here, the fact that you're not interested in the music is relevant because it's not going to necessarily make you want to fix the instrument. And also maybe perhaps in terms of Amir Lakum, it could be relevant because you're not making him into your shliach for that, according to the way Rav Shlomo Zalman expressed it. And we could add on, even according to the Abba Dover, it's also very compelling. You're not telling him to do a malacha, you're telling him to do something else, which happens to be, it's going to trigger a malacha as well. I think it was Gilad first.
In terms of Amir Lakum, isn't there another way to understand that the Rama that it's together, so you won't actually do the Malacha?
Right, so that comes up also. So then you can throw that in as well. So then it depends if you assume that it's, that the Rabbanan itself, if you say Psik Resha is deraisa, if you're asking to do something that yourself is deraisa, so then it's going to be harder to say, unless you want to say Psik Resha lo nichale, like the Gra said within the term of Zadashim, so then it's going to involve a few more nuances in terms of what exactly is going on. Hack.
In terms of the Psik Resha for a Jew in the fridge case, so the issue is if we say it's Kavana, so he knows that the fridge lights can open, but so too with the non-Jew, so you told him to open the fridge, you didn't tell him to open the light, but he knows that he's going to benefit from the light when it opens.
But it doesn't necessarily matter, because the question is the whole Isser is not the same type of Isser as you're doing it yourself. So if you did it yourself, so then everything comes onto your account. So you opened on this door, which triggered the light, you knew it was going to trigger the light, you turned on the light. In this case, the Akum turned on the light. Okay, so what's the tarbel on turning on the light? Well, he did it for you. No, he didn't. You didn't ask him to turn on the light. You asked him to open the door. So all he did for you was open the door. Or in terms of you're not talking about things you shouldn't be talking about on Shabbos, you didn't talk about it at all. You didn't talk about a malacha. You talked about something that's not a malacha. So there are grounds to maybe significantly distinguish. So,
the last part I'm trying to bring up,
mm-hmm.
it seems to be a very broad application for Halal Shabbos.
Which is the last part, the Amir Lachem one?
No, the idea that if you look at the Gzera and the reason behind it.
Right.
So like that could be taken, is he, are we providing any darb where that applies?
And sometimes you do find that's what. In general, we'll try to get that a little bit. You know, we'll try to talk about refuah when we talk about tochen, which is not so far away. But the gedarim of refuah sometimes do have a certain. There's a whole approach in Tosfos and question whether accepted or not. You know, there are some rishonim seem to imply that these gzeirish could be radically redefined based on the circumstances. And there are others that don't accept that, but that are still willing to factor in some of these realistic considerations into the discussion. So Bez Hashem, particularly in terms of the Fula and Tochen, we'll try to get into some of those discussions a little bit more. But in terms of how it affects this discussion, so basically what I'd like to try to zero in on here is that it opens up a lot of different avenues to look at this question. Right, the question of, a very relevant halachic question, of do we say there's a prohibition of Pesik Reisha if the issue involved is Derabanan? So we can look at it from a number of different angles. One way to look at it is we could say, listen, the Rabbanans have a certain kula to them. The Rabbanans are, like we said before, let's say in the yellow category, whatever will rate our different levels of Yisurim. So since we're makel by the Rabbanans, so then we can be makel here also. Now if one believes that Pesik Reisha itself is an Issa Rabbanan, so then that gives even more grounds to say that. We saw that the Tosfos Rid maintained this. And the Tosfos Rid in Yuma, that even according to Reb Shimon, who says Pesik Reisha, or maybe only according to Reb Shimon is relevant, but that Pesik Reisha B'nichale is Asur, Tosfos Rid said it's Asur Midrabanan. So most of the Rishonim were against that. Most of the Rishonim assumed that it's an Isur Daraisa. So it's a little hard to be makel from that perspective. But that's a part of the conversation. Are we just talking about the interaction of lower level Isurim, which if we combine enough of them, we could be makel? That's one question to ask. Second question to ask is, and as Tuvia was picking up on now, should we say that there are certain Drabanans which their character lends itself to seeing Pesik Reisha differently? And that opens up a whole different avenue of conversation. And it's not just, well, this is Drabbanan, that's Drabbanan, put the Drabbanans together, you get even less than a Drabbanan. But maybe Pesik Reisha has unique elements that require us to pay attention to the details. So if the whole Isser is coming from something indirect, even if we hold you liable for that indirect action normally, maybe if it's a Drabbanan, the picture shifts a little bit. So whether we focus on specific exceptions, such as maybe Amir al-Hakam being subject to a different conceptual understanding, or that specific example of Gzeir Hashem Yitake and Klishir also being a exception perhaps, that's one possible approach. Or we could say that maybe it's even broader than that, that maybe the Rabbanans as a whole have something about their nature that when you mix it with Pesik Reisha, something doesn't add up. There's something maybe inherent about the Rabbanans, not just their level of Chumrah, but something conceptual about the Rabbanans, and something conceptual about the Sekreshas, that you put the two together, you end up with no prohibition. Gil?
I understand Sekresha now, both Nikolai and Kolnikolai?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe even a Pesik Reisha D'Michalei by the Rabbanan, maybe you would be willing to say that there's something conceptual about both. You put them together, you don't have an essay. Anyone want to try to take a stab about that? Take any possible suggestions what conceptual principles would be involved? So Melechus Machsheves is a general Shabbos issue which isn't really tied into the Rabbanans. It affects the Pesik Reisha part of the equation. But I don't know if it really helps us to see Drabbanans any differently. Sammy?
I see something Drabbanan cooler, but I don't think that would help so much with Pesik Reisha.
Right, so it doesn't seem on the surface to help so much, right, because we're not really dealing with a suffix.
But you could also say that it's not Gzeir that they would go there. I mean, the Drabbanan, wrong, they go there I mean, it's like the field of Rav Shaft when he goes into
Melachah Shrich Lagufa by a Toldo.
Right, so meaning if it's a Gzeir Derabanan, so then Gzeir Derabanan might only do that specific action.
And not to do it psik ratio only.
Correct, meaning you're not doing that action. You're not being the Takein. You're not playing the instrument for music that you're going to be associated. But here you're banging a triangle instead of playing it for music, right?
Right.
You're not really banging, so therefore it's not in place of the Darabonim.
But you're not talking, because you mentioned the triangle example, but you're not focusing on that.
No, it's just an easy place to understand
why.
Right.
Any Darabonim. So you might be onto something. Anyone want to try to take that and run with that a little bit more? So what Sammy's essentially saying is that maybe the Darabonim as a whole, the whole concept of a prohibition Darabonim, not a specific one, but all the Darabonim, maybe Chazal asked them, in a sense, is doing that. One's not supposed to do that. But if one is causing them, maybe that's already a different get it. Yeah. Right?
I'm saying in the broadest, possibly weakest point, you can say, hey, mamru, bring mamru. They establish that you can't do it like this. But once you're adding in the segregation, where it's clearly not directly doing the malachas, those calculations, don't think the segregation is exactly the malacha. We're just saying that it's close enough to the malacha, and therefore the problem. So once you establish that their abundance is a problem, so you can say that it was built into the way that they're set up, that it needs to be the exact malacha and not close enough to the malacha.
See, that all makes a lot of sense. The problem with hanging it on Heimamru and Heimamru is that we don't know that Heimamru is, or we don't know that they said that it's Mutter in this case. The question is, why would one assume across the board without having, unless you say, well, I read your Mars this way, and that's what it tells me in the case, but if one doesn't have a clear marker that this is true, why would one assume
Do
we always require a marker? No, this question, what pushes us in this direction? Do we just say, well, I'm probably over it in a maple way, or is there something about the nature of the interaction of these two concepts which leads us to believe that in low umru, the makom segregation? Yeah.
I think there's a difference for Ravonim and CI.
Okay.
The whole point of things are wanted to avoid people doing certain things. They're not speaking of doing it, so therefore it's not a problem. There's no need in preventing someone from doing a mice and not thinking about it.
Okay, so there is a lot, there definitely is a lot to be said for that. You know, that sometimes if we see Ravonim as a protective measure, so then this will essentially perhaps get us ready a step away from actually doing it. So then we don't necessarily have to prohibit this onto something else if we're not doing it directly, which would also touch upon what Sammy was alluding to a minute ago, that maybe we should then distinguish between the Rabbanim, that maybe when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos specifically, as we alluded to previously, there are different categories of Rabbanim. There are Gezeirah Rabbanim, which would fit into what you're talking about, and Melachos Rabbanim, which maybe are not Gezeirahs per se. So that's a possible approach.
In terms of the level of fear for doing a Darabonim Meshuvi, are you not high of anything?
So what's that about? So that's a big focus if that's true, but it's probably relevant if it is true. So what Gil is talking about, and this is a relevant element which could take us in a couple of different directions to address this question, is that there is a famous position of the Nesivos HaMishpat. The Nesivos HaMishpat may or may not be saying what he's attributed, but he is portrayed as saying the following. That when it comes to, he certainly says some of the following, he's portrayed as saying all of the following. He's portrayed as understanding what he's saying in the following way. That we know when it comes to an Isser D'oraisa, so we have Shogeg and Mezid. So if I do something to Mezid, I'm subject to an Onesh. And if I do something to Shogeg, so then it's generally not a punishment, but sometimes there is a kapara. Sometimes there needs to be a purification process, whether it's a korban or whatever it is, there needs to be some type of rectification, because it's assumed that the avera still stains my soul somewhat. Even if I didn't do it with full intent, it still has a bad effect on me. So the Nesivos seems to say that if one violates an Issa D'Rabbanan b'shogeg, so then
not only is there no onesh, but it doesn't leave even a kapar. Doesn't need even any type of rectification. It's as if it didn't happen. That's what it sounds like. There's some debate if that's really what he means. That's what it sounds like he's saying. So the way many understood the Nesivus, and this is now associated with Nesivus' position, even though there's some debate if that's what he meant, but the Meshachachim and others understood that there is a fundamental difference between Doraisas and Drabanas. Doraisas are what we'll call Yisurei Chafza, that the object is inherently tainted, and therefore if one eats, let's say, a chazer, so then not only does he do it on purpose, does he do it on avera, but if he does it inadvertently, so then it still stains his neshama, it's still somewhat bad. While if you're dealing with an issur d'rabbanan, so then the way it's explained in the later Svarim is that the d'rabbanan can't have an inherent bad status. If a chicken cheeseburger, and it's also a d'rabbanan. So a chicken cheeseburger can't be that there's an issur chatzah there, that there's something inherently poisonous about this. Because before Chazal came along, it was neutral. And why should we assume that Chazal have the power to change the status of an object? Question about that?
Yeah. I mean, I never saw this inside, but somebody quoted to me that there's a riz that says that they have the ability to change the reality.
Right, so so the Asma Daraisa is probably the most prominent, even though he's relatively recent. He's against this whole result. Joseph Engel and Asma Daraisa very much argues on this whole principle. The first to say what the principle is, and then we'll just make reference to it. So the principle, it's a popular principle, it's associated with the Nesivus and the Rasmanah and the Chumsofer and many others, that there is essentially this fundamental difference, that Rabbanan, there's no Isser in the Chefza. Right? The Chefza will have to be neutral, because what is the nature of rabbinic authority? I think when we talked about Parsha Shoftim a few months ago, we wanted to get up to this, but we ran out of time, because it was the last Pasuk in Rishon, if I remember correctly, we didn't get up to that, talking about all the details. But if you assume, let's say like the Rambam, that the source for rabbinic authority is the pasuk l'sasim and hadavar, you're not allowed to deviate. So what does that mean? It means that Jewish people are obligated to listen to the rabbis. But it doesn't mean that Jewish objects, or there's any concept of Jewish, it doesn't mean that objects are subject to the influence of the rabbis. So why can't we eat a chicken cheeseburger? Because the rabbis told us not to. But they have no power over the chicken cheeseburger. They can't change its essence. It's still going to be whatever it is. So therefore, memela, the object, is neutral. And the isser is an isser on the individual. The individual is not allowed to eat it. So it happens to be that as popular as this far is, so as Sammy and Tuppy and Gil, I think we're all going to do, so there are those who disagree. Yosef Engel prominently has an essay in Asman Daraisa where he does not think this is the case. And the basic principle he advocates, based on certain statements in Chazal, is he thinks that a Kodesh Baruch Hu signs off on whatever Chazal do. So once Chazal make a gzeira, so then Kodesh Baruch Hu changes the world, so to speak. This has many, many ramifications, most of which we can't get into today because we'll never finish Pesach Reisha. But just to take what's relevant to us now, that he does disagree. He thinks that even Drabbanans can be an Isra Chavza. And just parenthetically, it's also relevant to other things we talked about. So he thinks you can have an Isra Chavza if something is an Isra Drabbanan. And also, even if something is temporary, he says that many assume that a temporary Isra cannot be inherent. He thinks that's wrong. He thinks that could also be inherent. So that affects our whole Malacha Shabbos consideration also, as I mentioned on day one, that there are those who understand that Shabbos is about the individual, for a variety of reasons, one of them being because it's only one day a week. So how could we say that plowing is bad, that planting is inherently bad, cooking and writing are bad, when 6 days a week, they're okay? So it must be that really they're just a prohibition on the individual, and they're inherently okay. That was one of the points that was used to make the distinction between Halacha Shabbos and other things. And Rav Zvengel disputes both. He thinks that both temporary Yisurim and rabbinical Yisurim, they can all be inherent, and he doesn't buy into the whole story. But as far as this whole distinction, many do buy into it, and that could perhaps be useful for us in a number of ways.
So Sam? Could you distinguish between
Between temporary and Durabanan?
Between the Rons, the
Rasa, the... Right, would he distinguish it? He recognizes that there's still, you know, he can't ignore the concept of Suffolk Durabanan Lakula and the like. He has to acknowledge that there are differences in Halacha. But as far as this conceptual difference, he doesn't sign on to it. Many others do. So work off the assumption for a minute. Let's say if we accept the Chassam Sofer, the Nesivis is understood like this, and the Yor Sameach and a whole host of others. And we say that essentially a Durabanan is not about the action. A Durabanan is about you. You are prohibited to do this action. And to put an extra page on it, and those who understand, like the Meshech Chachma specifically, that it's a broad Isser, that it's not an Isser specifically about this action, but that it's an Isser of rebellion. That you're not allowed to be morated against Chazal. You're not allowed to rebel against rabbinic authority. So therefore, that's the nature of the prohibition, that if you knowingly violate a rabbinic dictate, so then that's rebellion against rabbinic authority. So for example, within the Nesivus' idea that if you do something by accident, you don't have to have a kapara, because the whole nature of the prohibition is not to rebel against rabbinic authority. If you're not doing it on purpose, you didn't know you were doing it, so then you weren't rebelling. So if there's no rebellion, there's nothing. I'll give another example of that point, just while we were talking about it. There's a fascinating tosis to Yavamis, again, just to give us a cache of Yavamis again. So there's a tosis to Yavamis that talks about the Tumas Kohen. And you know, if a Kohen finds himself in a room with a dead body, so he has to run out of there. He has to immediately leave. The tosis says, what if he finds himself in a room with a Tumah Durabanan? So says Tosfos, funny type of distinction, then he has to leave, he doesn't have to run. He can walk out. So what does that mean? That's just a quantitative measurement. So if it's a Tumah Daraisa, you gotta run 6 miles now. If it's a Tumah Durabanan, then you can walk 2 miles now. Is that pshat? Hard to believe. So Rav Chanan Wasserman once explained in the Kovetz Aretz HaYavamis that if you assume that a Tumah Daraisa, that's an Issur Chatzah, so that is directly offensive to the Kohen. The Kohen has to right away leave. While a Tumah Darabanan, it's not that that is inherently offensive to the Kohen. There's a Din Darabanan that the Kohen can't be with it. So the Din Drabanan requires the Kohen to leave. But there's no reason for him to run, because as long as he's leaving, so he is obeying. He's not rebelling as long as he's doing what Chazal asks. So there's no reason for him to leave quickly, because as long as he's in the process of leaving, so he's not in rebellion against what Chazal has said. I always thought this is parallel to the difference between a fire and a fire drill. If Chassid Shalom, there's a fire in the building, so everybody runs out as quickly as possible because they don't want to get caught by the fire. But if you know it's a fire drill, so then everybody leaves because they got to follow the rules. They can't rebel against the rules of not leaving. But they don't feel motivated to run because they know that there's no real fire. So it seems to me it's comparable here, that if it was a Tumah Daraisa, so that's a spiritual fire. He has to leave to not be in contact with it. But if it's a Tumah Darabanan, the real rule is he has to not break the rules. He has to obey the rules of Chazal. So if he's in the process of leaving, it doesn't matter how quickly it happens. I think John from the first maybe the
this general opinion of Yosef Engel, does he apply that when you say Rebbe Rupp signs off that it's strictly for Chazal or Rabbanim any
generation? Yeah, and you get into an interesting question of what the schedule of the saucer is, and then you get into all kinds of historical complexities. So presumably that's a whole discussion. The Torah says the saucer, you can't deviate from the rabbinic dictate. Does that apply only for Sanhedrin? Does it apply in later generations? Does it say for Achinah? But the whole story won't get into now, but presumably it would correlate to that question. Which gets into a lot of other questions which will probably take us off of segregation. But what I'm interested in now is if one accepts this distinction, let's say this is a difference that the Rabbanans are, first of all, an Isser Maisa specifically, but not about the Chepta, and they are characterized as an Isser of rebellion. So then, does that perhaps give us any other avenues to understand how segregation may interact with this concept a little bit differently? Daniel?
Just a quick question, and I'll get inside here. The concept of that all Rabbanans are talking to the Raisa. So how would that make sense for the Rav Hanan's idea? Because the whole idea is just listening to the Chazal, so there's no need to make exactly the Raisa. Especially in this example.
Well, because it is a little bit of a side question, so we kind of will come to a different... It does take a little bit far afield, so you'll forgive me and maybe I push it off, because how exactly, in general, part of the problem that the Rishon and the Achronim have is how do you deal with something like Rabbanim Lekula and the like. Anytime you have differences in policies between the Raisa and the Rabbanim, can the Raisa talk is one issue, but a much bigger issue is if we sign on to the Rambam's view that all the Rabbanim are motivated by a Pasuk and Chumash, whether it's the Pasuk he cites or any other Pasuk, so then what kind of grounds do you have to make distinctions? That's a whole bigger discussion. We'll find the time to get into a little bit more, but we'll have to push it off for now. For now, we'll just try to focus on if this distinction is true, so does it interact specifically with segregation in a way that may allow for an exemption of Jonathan Prism?
So I'm not sure if this is exactly, Samuel, what you said, but basically we're saying that there's nothing inherently bad about this or the bond. They're bond, you're not supposed to do it. So I'm segregation, you're not really doing it. You're doing action A, I'm just doing action B.
Okay, so that's a possibility. Right? That's how some understand it. They're willing to get into this approach. Right, that if one says that the Isser is not, it's not a case where we really care about the result. It's not that Chazal are concerned that this impact shouldn't happen. They don't want you doing this action. So maybe segregation is not really called doing it. There's enough of a liability that in this or Daraisa, we won't allow it. You know, we'll say that it's all connected conceptually, or it's all connected in terms of liability. Right? We've been trying to figure out this whole time why segregation is high in the first place. And we had these two basic theories that either it's high because we essentially hold you liable for the consequences you can't escape from, or because we say they're connected. But either way, both of those approaches are somewhat almost artificial. The fact is, you're not really doing practically A and B, you're really doing A. You're just either inescapably liable for B, or A and B are connected, so it's as if you're doing A and B. But we could say that in the practical world, you're just doing A. And therefore, the rabbis prohibit you from doing a malacha, and the malacha is B, and you're doing A. There could be grounds to say that. I could also say it a little bit differently, as some Svarim want to suggest, that perhaps one could say that if we say the problem of segregation is that more kavana is now transferred on to the meisim, so now you have a combination of kavana and the malacha. So maybe that only works when you have a malacha deraisa, which has a certain inherent significance to it. So then, together with your kavana, it adds up to a full malacha. But if the malacha itself doesn't have any inherent significance, because it's a drabanan, it's all about your doing it. So then this whole svara of kavana is going to not necessarily work. Just to give a parallel, I once thought that maybe one could say a svara that the question of mitzvot svirkos kavana, the opposite end of the equation. Now, whether or not mitzvot need kavana, that maybe there is a svara to say that maybe mitzvot derabanan should need kavana and mitzvot deraisa shouldn't need kavana. Because maybe deraisa, the mitzvah has its own kavana because the action is inherently significant. But derabanans are all about your behavior. And if you don't have the kavana, maybe you have nothing. So maybe one should say l'halacha that mitzvah serious kavana by derabanans, but not by deraisas. The problem with saying that is the most famous chiluk between deraisas and derabanans in terms of mitzvah serious kavana goes in the opposite direction. Magen Avraham quotes the Radbaz that says that mitzvah deraisas need kavana and mitzvah derabanan don't. The opposite of what we just said. Basically, presumably, because it's an unresolved issue, so the Isis is Machmer and Rabban is Meir. I did see once a mistake, and he quotes an obscure opinion that says it the way we just said it, that the Rabbanans need Kabbana and the Isis don't. And then he kind of trails off and doesn't explain it. So maybe we could explain it where we're saying here. So maybe if this logic makes any sense, so you could say, so those two sides of the equation, that mitzvos, the Isis need Kabbana. Drabanans don't need kavana, drabanans do. And so too, in terms of malachos, you can violate a malacha even without kavana, or without intent. And the drabanan, maybe you can't. So maybe there shouldn't be segregation by drabanan based on that. Okay, any further comments, Gil?
In terms of whether drabanan needs kavana or not kavana, so in the Gemara, what the cases that they bring is they're all Daraita, they bring Shofar, and are they all
Daraitas? For the most part, it seems like, in the example, the Hapsi Mitzvah Chavana is also a tangent, so I don't spend too much time on it, but it's a big unresolved issue. Gemara asks the question, gives examples like you mentioned of Shofar, and of Megillah, and of Kriyashma in a different place. And this, how we're passing on this is a
Daraita question.
Did I say Megillah? I said the Shofar and Matzah. Shofar and Matzah is Daraita.
More interesting is Svar does have to cure precipitation also. If it's not inherently bad, it doesn't have to co-agree with the other part of the action.
So the reason I wouldn't say that is because, as we've seen from some of the other examples, that connection of two actions through segregation is not a function of badness. It's not even a function of Isser at all. Because we saw the example from Ezekiel and the example from Nachshirin about drinking water and the water you're detaching that has to come automatically, the rush. So we find that segregation seems to apply in a lot of different areas, which are not necessarily a function of badness. So I don't know if there's a room to distinguish based on that or not. Sammy?
I don't exactly understand the school of that. Since the action isn't significant, therefore there would be a need for an explicit kavana. I thought the whole concept of the fact that you're doing a maisa, which brings about another maisa, automatically means that you have to have kavana, unless there's some, you know, outside thing that's clearly, you know, like lo michale, it's bad for you. Therefore, you won't have it. It won't give you that kavana. But otherwise, it's, you can't not have that kavana. It's not like a.
So, but what it means is it needs a connection there. That's happening is that you have an objective bad result, and now your kavana makes you liable for it. But maybe with the drabana, the result isn't of interest to us. The only thing that's interesting in general in the drabana is the intent. And you don't have intent for that, you have intent for something else. So maybe the lack of intent to do the drabana doesn't add up to anything. Which the truth is, which really a similar avenue between these two stories. The fact is that the drabana that you're doing, you don't intend to do. So the intent that you have is essentially, you have this or the right, so you have three steps. You have your intent to do action A, you have the effect of malacha B, and then you have the missing intent of malacha B, which is filled in by the intent of malacha A. So you have intent and you have an effect. Or it's very complicated, that equation. When it comes to the drabana, since there's nothing there in the end, the impact is not of interest to us. All that's interested us is your desire to rebel against Chazal and to perform in a Sitrabanan. So here you're missing that completely. And there's nothing that's provided by the Chapsa. There's nothing provided by the impact. Because
That's not part of an issur d'rabbanan.
So just to recap that point, then we'll have a few minutes to start at a different point. So essentially, what we saw is this, that the question of issur d'rabbanan with issur d'rabbanan was a big machlokes, that the Trumas Hadeshin seems to allow it. Many Acharonim did accept that view as well. And the Magen Avraham disagreed. We saw that the Gra said, even within the Trumas Hadeshin, maybe only below Michale, because it's two Drabbanans. But others assume it means all Drabbanans. And against the Magen Avraham, who didn't allow it. As well as the Rashbah. Rashbah didn't allow it either. So then we saw that we can view this a couple of ways. We can view this as just a general magnitude issue, that Rabbanans are makel, Sedesha is less than a full Isser, so putting the two together, you might have a Kula. Or we could look at it more conceptually. As we mentioned, there are some possible exceptions. For example, even if some will assume that even the Magen Avraham would allow some exceptions. So we saw the general exception possibly of Amir L'Akum, which had a conceptual difference because Amir L'Akum, maybe the whole structure of what makes Amir L'Akum prohibited, doesn't include when he's not directly doing this specific Maisa. Or we mentioned a possible exception in terms of the specific Rabbanan of using an instrument, that maybe since the whole issue is we're afraid you're going to repair the instrument, so that's only relevant if you're intentionally playing music. If you're not, maybe the Rabbanan doesn't come into play.
In terms of when we say like what Saz of Malacha Guru, does that play into this?
Yeah, it does. Yes and no. How it plays in is a longer discussion, so maybe we'll move it. Especially when it comes to Malacha Shemeshu, the roof of the whole discussion. How Saz a Malacha Guru on the one hand, but then it has some Makoros on the other hand, so it gets into all kinds of complications. So then we talk about broadly conceptually, could we say that not just in terms of quantitative Chumrah, but maybe we could say that there's a conceptual issue in Drabbanan, and there's a conceptual structure in Psik Resha, that putting the two together comes out that there's no Isser if it's a Drabbanan and Psik Resha. And we looked at a couple ways to understand that, that specifically if we say that Psik Resha is about the Drabbanans is about the distinction between Chetzer and Gavra, let's say, distinction between focusing on the impact or focusing on the individual's action, which is only prohibited as a desire not to rebel against Chazal, which is an attitude associated with the Nesivis and the Meshech Chachma and the Tzam Sofer and others against the Beis Temple. So then, maybe there's grounds to say that Psik Resha doesn't do it here. Either because you are not even intending to do this Maisa, which would be rebellion against Chazal, or to say a little bit more, that maybe we focus on Kavana being supplied by the reality of the act. And when you're dealing with Rabbanan, so the reality of the act is not really as relevant. And I suggested a parallel, that when it comes to Mitzvah Sirius Kavana, maybe one could say logically that we should require Kavana only by Rabbanans and not by the Raises, even though acknowledging that it's not the common understanding, if anything, we find the opposite from the Magen Avraham and the Radbaz. But there was a view of the Stechemet that made such a distinction, and then we could flip that over to here as well. Okay, so in the next few minutes, let's try to add a few more points. One very similar point that we mentioned, we talked about, I think Zomer V'Tzarach La'itzim, we talked about this, but it's worth mentioning again in this context. We're talking about Chatzi Shears, we're talking about this before Yantif, so it's definitely worth mentioning again. That in the context of Chatzi Shir, so the Kajib Lavarav has a tshuva, which others agree with, where he maintains that the Isser of Chatzi Shir, if you're doing a malacha only partially, let's say, on a partial item, so even if one assumes that there generally is an Isser deraisa of a Chatzi Shir on Shabbos, that maybe that wouldn't be true if it is a Psik Resha situation. So why is that? So is that just, again, a combination of leniencies? Saying, well, Psik Resha is somewhat of a lower level, and Chatzi Shir is somewhat of a lower level. There's no Onesh.
What's the case?
Which could be relevant, by the way. What's the case of this? So let's say you're going to cause something to be cooked, but it's a very small item. Apart from this, has the truth about where you're going to, I don't know exactly what he's saying, but he's talking about, but let's say you're going to comb hair and the only potential to pull out one hair. Two, which I don't understand to see us how that works out. Other examples are probably a little more feasible. Sorry? You only have one hair to deal with, I guess, theoretically it's possible. So it's a little hard to figure out exactly the Metzius to that case, but whatever it is, if the Yisir is on a Fatih Shir, and there are examples, and if you're talking about a very small amount, and you're going to provoke bluff that happens in Pesach Reisha, so then he assumes that there is a hetzer for that. So one could say, this is what the Kach Lover's far is that if the whole idea of Chatzi Shir is an Achshavei type of approach, the whole reason that normally the Torah excludes the prohibition from less than a Shir, but if you're paying attention and you're deciding to give significance to a small amount, so then we say Achshavei, we say, okay, you have now credited this small amount with a status. But that only applies if you're doing it on purpose. If you're not trying to do this malacha, you're just provoking it through something else, so then it's hard to call that ashrei. It's hard to say that you granted it significance when you didn't do anything to grant it significance. You did something else which triggered it indirectly. So therefore, it makes a lot of sense to say that you put psik resha and Chatzi Shir together, we normally have an essay. So again, this is relevant to what you're saying in terms of the Rabbanans, because it looks not just in terms of weighing different levels of severity and adding them together, but also it looks at what is the nature of the liability of Psik Resha, and asks, are there possible exceptions to that? Are there possible situations where the nature of this liability is not going to make sense when combined with something else? Which brings us into another very debated topic. We'll just try to sketch the outlines of it. But the question we've alluded to in the past of a suffix secretion. If you have a situation which is a suffix secretion, so that expression sounds like it's a contradiction in terms. Right? It sounds like those are two opposites. Secretion means definite, and suffix means not definite. So how do those two come together? So they come together in terms of a situation where you don't really know the facts. You don't know what the Messias is. You do know that if a certain Messias is true, then it's a psik ratio. So to give a modern example, you have no idea whether the light is off in your fridge. So you know that if the light is on, the light is activated, if you open the door, it will definitely turn it on. But you don't know the facts of whether or not the light is on. So it's a suffix about the situation, and you just don't know whether or not the terms for psik resha are in effect. So on this point, there is a Taz, who was the standard bearer on this issue. The Taz was makel on this. The Taz said that one could close a box where he's not sure if there are flies in the box. So it's potentially a tzad issue. He just doesn't know the fact of whether or not there is an animal inside. So he knows that if he knew there was an animal inside, so then closing the box would be a psik resha. But he doesn't know if there's an animal inside or not, so therefore it's a suffix on the facts. Jonathan, go first.
Couldn't you say that instead of if there was definite flies in the box, it wouldn't be a psik resha for inside, that would be a definite inside? No.
That's the point, right? So the psik resha would be on the... That would definitely happen. That's what we're calling a figuration. If it's closed in the box, we'd definitely do it. But the suffix element is we don't know if the facts are present or not. We don't know if there's an animal inside the box in order to be trapped. We know that if there is an animal inside, the animal will definitely be trapped.
Right.
That's where the figuration comes in. We just don't know if the facts are there that the animal exists, the flies exist, in order to be trapped. That's the suffix.
No, I'm saying that if you were to close it, not that it would be a psik resha, it would be real inside.
I mean, that stuff would be the active stuff.
Yeah.
Right, so that gets into the whole dual intent issue. Like you have the house. You're not closing it to trap animals. You're closing it for a different purpose. The question is, would it also be a tzad on this?
Isn't this a shem miskatim?
Right, so the double shem miskatim is the creation. Would it be a psik resha? So you're definitely going to trap the animals.
No, I'm saying, that's not a double shem miskatim.
It's not shem shiach l'gufa, but if it'll say it's nichalei, so it's not even not shem shiach l'gufa. If it's not nichalei, then it's comparable to not shem shiach l'gufa. But if it's nichalei, then it's going to be not shem shiach l'gufa. A secretion from nichalei becomes a not shem shiach l'gufa. But let's assume, for example, that it's nichalei, so then you have a potential moach.
Right,
so that's the issue. So then the question is, how do we factor in the suffix? How do we factor in the fact that you don't know that it's going to happen? So the Taz is quoted as the standard bearer for being makel on this. As they point out, there's a Ramban, it sounds like this also. The Rana, it sounds like this. Some discussion of whether or not he means this. But the Taz, maybe the Ramban and others, are all associated with this position. And there are those who may disagree. It's a big question whether or not there is a disagreement from Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in the Yoredeya, put it on the Maamar Makomos, he asks on the Ramah, that the Ramah talks about, you find that an Akum has a fire running, and you want to stoke the coals of the fire for some reason. And the Ramah says, don't do that, because maybe there's Basar B'chalov in the fire. Maybe you'll be taking part in Bishul Basar B'chalov. So the question is, why should he answer that? It's a situation of Davar Sheinu Miskaveh. You're not trying to cook the Bishul Basar B'chalov specifically. And it's not obscuration, because you don't know that there is Basar B'chalov in this pot. It's not definitely going to be Nis or Bishul Basar B'chalov. So why don't we say it should be Davar Sheinu Miskaveh, not Psikreisha? So says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, no, Psikreisha, that only applies in future situations. That this may or may not trigger a malach in the future. So if it's not definite, we'll say it's not a Psikreisha. But here, the Safik is not about the future. The Safik is about what already is. Is there Basa B'chalav in this pot or not? So that's a straight up Safik Daraisa. So you'd have to be mine. So it comes out that it seems like you're saying the opposite of the Taz. Right? That the Taz says that this suffix in Metzias can be factored in Lakulo. Jaeger is saying, no, this suffix in Metzias is worse than a normal Davar Sheinu Miskaveh, and we have to be Machmer treated like a Sveik in the Reis.
The more reason being on Shabbos and then keep your day.
Ah, exactly. So there are those who then comment that even though one could say that Rabbi Akiva Eiger is arguing on the Taz, but Daniel correctly surmises that maybe one could be machalik between Yisurei Shabbos and other Yisurim. And that's the view, for example, the Pazimberger Rebbe has a tshuva in which he makes that distinction. And Davar Shehafman also made that distinction, that maybe Taz is still right when it comes to Shabbos because of Malachas not Shabbos, and maybe by other Yisurim it will be treated more as a Safek Daraisa question. So this was a big debate. There were many who were machmer on these. The Shulchan Aruch Harav sounds like he was machmer on this. The Leva of Ram, Ram Weinfeld has a tshuva in which he assumes that many are machmer on this. Nishma Shabbos with Harfenis has a tshuva in which he assumes, again, if we're dealing with a drabanan, let's say, so then we can throw in both points, the kula, the drabanan and the safek, and assume that there's grounds to be makel for the combination of factors.
Across the board,
I believe that a safek, it sounds like the safek situation, you should treat this like a safek deraisa and be machmer. So here it's interesting. And so we'll try to dive in a few minutes, but just finish this point. And by the way, this is a huge fight. So if you want a very extensive discussion about this issue, you can look at the Sefer Taras HaMelachos. In the volume on Sod, he has a 7 or 8 page discussion in relatively small print about this question, about this whole machlokas, about particular ratio with the suffering, particular ratio in the past, essentially. Sometimes it's phrased al-psikresha al-sha'avar because the details that are in question are already in effect. Or sometimes it's phrased the subject situation is the same Shaila. And if you want to find a very extensive discussion, you should look in the Targum on the Lachos on Zohar. It can keep you occupied for a very long time. So essentially, just in terms of what we've been trying to draw out this morning, is you could look at this question really in two completely different ways. One we could say is, well, what is Psik Ratio? Mr. Deraisa or Mr. Derabbanan? So it's probably Mr. Deraisa, but over Rishonim say it's Mr. Deraisa. So now we've introduced it a suffix into the mix, another suffix on top of the Psik Ratio. The Psik Ratio itself is Mr. Deraisa, so this is a suffix Deraisa. We should be Machmir, like many who assumed that was the case. Or maybe it's sad to say that if you want to follow those who's great, to say it's a Rabbana, okay, it's a Suffolk Rabbana. Or if it's a Psikratia Dol Nichole, then okay, it's a Rabbana, so Psikratia Dol Nichole with a Suffolk. Again, that would be grounds to say should be Mutta. So we could view this question purely through a Chumrah lens. We say Sederaisa and Ramachmer, Sederabadan, Ramekel, we put this in the yellow category, whatever you want to call it, we can approach this question purely that way, and indeed, many posts can do. Or, we could also approach it through the particular lens of what Sederaisa conceptually indicates to us. So, for example, if one wants to say the focus on Kavana, that because you know what's happening, then you are liable for your intent as if it's intent on the whole thing. So then we could argue, but if you all know what's happening, you have room to doubt whether it's happening. So then we don't necessarily blame you for the whole thing. So it could be that, again, we're not necessarily just mixing and matching Rabbanans and different leniencies, but maybe the whole concept of Psik Ratio is eroded if there is a suffix element. So we started off this discussion by saying they sound like there are contradiction in terms of Psik Ratio and suffix, but maybe they're not a contradiction in terms of these scenarios. But maybe we can go back to our assumption. Maybe it is a contradiction in terms. Maybe if there's any doubt, it's going to happen. Whether that doubt comes from a future causality question or it comes from a present unknown, all of that means it's not a integration. Maybe there really is a fundamental contradiction between these terms. And any degree, any substantial degree of suffix introduced into the equation means it's not a integration. Hi.
Just a definitional question. Is yes. Suffix la'atid and la'avod the same as suffix kesra?
Not always. In this case, it comes out that way. Yeah, I mean, you have... That category could be used to distinguish between many things. It could be used sometimes to say it's a suffix and psak. So I don't want to say across the board. In this case, it will. Who's up first?
Or just, okay. I mean, can I get to Gil's question?
Yes.
Going to Yevamos Yuni Sukkah. We see throughout Yevamos, in particular the fourth paragraph, three times, that we say a suffix and mitzius on something that happened or will happen, whether she's pregnant or on the Yizim Mekadesh, which we're not sure which woman. So Valitos has developed this whole idea that suffix in the past that you could, if Eliyahu would come and tell us what it is, that's something that we require, but something in the future, we view that as even if we could know what's going to happen, that's not suffix that we could be.
It's a more unknown kind of suffix. As Donald Rumsfeld would say, there are known unknowns and unknown unknowns. So it's an even more unknown unknown as opposed to a known unknown. So essentially what it means is that conceptually maybe there really is a contradiction in terms between suffix and psik ratio, and maybe they can't coexist. So that, in terms of the kavana svara, that certainly seems to have a certain appeal to it. In terms of the idea that the actions are joined, so then maybe we could say differently, maybe. We could maybe say the actions are joined, they're joined regardless of whether you know that or not. In fact, the metzius is that closing this causes tzad, so then the fact that you're aware of it maybe doesn't necessarily factor in, and maybe there's room to be machmir in that suffix as well. So essentially, and we'll dive mincha now, but I just want to draw out here on all of these shilas. So we talked about essentially today three shilas about, and they're all very nogei alah halach l'maisa. The chatzis are a little bit less, but the other two for sure. The question of whether we're machmir on a psik reisha even by a nisad rabbanan. The question of whether there's a psik ratio
even by Chatz Yishir. And the question of whether Psik Reish applies if there's a suffix in the existing situation, all of these relevant questions. And what we tried to draw out is that in each case there are specifics that could factor into the equation. There's a general issue that one could bring up that maybe all of these should be makel because of suffix, Drabanan, Chatz Yishir, they're all lesser categories, so to speak. Or we could view it through a different lens, and we could say that the unique qualities of Psik Reish, a chiyuv coming through imposed intent or through direct linkage, maybe the nature of Psik Reish doesn't necessarily carry when we have these unique scenarios where the facts are in dispute, or the prohibition is Drabanan, or the prohibition requires Achshavei, or the like, maybe doesn't interact with Psik Reish in a way that creates a issue. Okay, so we will end there. We'll do a quick mincha. And if you have anyone need to get Sidurim, you want to get Sidurim? Okay. Close up shop over here. How you doing? Who's up first?
So according to what we just said, concluding that, so not so much the action A, action B, but according to what you say that because of always how we define the Psik Reish now you don't run up. Does that mean that we're...
I think. I think people just getting Sidurim and like, I hope. Hope they're all coming back, yeah.
So does that mean that we're basically, according to what we just said about Kavana, you can't really have, does that mean we're demoting it automatically to Davar Sheinu Miskaven?
It could end up that way. That's the way to phrase it.
Okay, I know what it up.
And in general, anything that we're going to say would be one step more makeable.